American Samoa's best music mix. It's 93KHJ. Good morning and welcome to the program. 6:30 here, and we have a story that is going to be broken here soon about a resolution on equal rights for the territories. And here to kind of explain a little bit more about that is somebody who works very closely with the many different offices across the territory. We want to welcome Howard Hills, and Howard, of course, worked under President Carter, President Reagan. You are a territorial lawyer and a constitutional lawyer. And as we can see, our Congresswoman, Mr. Hills, is the only territorial delegate who is not co-sponsoring this bill. And, you know, maybe you could just sort of tell us what that means against the optics of not sponsoring such a bill, sir.
Well, it's not the first time that the Congresswoman from American Samoa has been a profile in courage, and I think that this is an example of her really providing important leadership, not just for American Samoa, but really for all the territories. Because you know, there's a movement afoot in the Washington D.C. establishment and in the bureaucracy, and there's a movement afoot in some of the territories to have the courts come in and decide political status, kind of a one-size-fits-all solution that would be judicially mandated and would, in essence, establish an undefined but new status by declaring all of the historical court rulings to be invalid. And it's kind of tempting to say, you know, the issue of territorial status, self-determination, you know, the idea that each territory has a unique relationship with the United States and has to move forward and improve that relationship and enhance it through locally initiated self-determination. That idea is complicated. And it's,
Attorney
and
Hills, if I could just ask you a quick question there. Could you give us the worst-case scenario if they just sort of issued that blanket legislation for all the territories?
Well, what the scenario that's evolving is, you've got a congressional members of Congress who are involved in the territorial affairs, the representatives from the territories, and then the chairman of the committee in the House, basically proposing a resolution that, if it were adopted by the House, would be intended to influence the courts. And basically it's baiting the courts to do Congress's job. It's baiting the courts to, by judicial edict, establish this one-size-fits-all. And so, essentially, a worst-case scenario would be that the territories no longer have options, whether it's independence, free association, to try to improve the current status, or to try to either become a state in the case of Puerto Rico, perhaps, but in the case of the smaller territories, maybe to become part of an existing state. I mean, those are the full range of options that exist under international law and under U.S. law. And what you would basically have is you would say, okay, the insular cases no longer apply. What does that mean? What replaces the insular cases? The insular cases are controversial, and we all have our criticisms of the insular cases, but what do you replace it with? Suddenly, are you going to offer incorporation to all the territories? Does that include the option of statehood or becoming part of a state? Or are you going to say the real problem is that you would end up with incorporation, but no commitment to a status solution. So then, you know, you would be in the worst case scenario would be that Congress and the courts would just start all over again. You know, they did it in 1901, start all over again and start making ad hoc decisions in court and ad hoc decisions in Congress, in terms of what are the rights and what are the political status of the territories. And it would be a movement away from the progress that's been made towards recognizing, and Congresswoman Coleman Radowagen has provided real leadership in this progress, to provide progress to recognize that each territory has to define and chart and envision its own unique relationship with the United States. And that may, you know, there's people in Guam who are saying Guam should go independent right now. There's people in Guam who are saying, you know, Guam should try to become incorporated. There are people in Guam who are saying that Guam should just try to keep the current status and improve it. And that's kind of true in all the territories. But the point is, what you don't want to do is have the courts take the bait that's being put out there by some in Congress right now for the courts to do the job that's really the job of Congress. And you know, the last time they did this, guess what? The last time the courts stepped in because Congress didn't act, guess what? That was the Insular cases in 1901. Congress hadn't made it clear what they wanted to do, and so they asked the court to do it, and then the court did it. And so now here we are 119 years later, or 18 years later, and we're saying, well, now let's throw the Insular cases out. And you know, the Insular cases have actually been used. I don't like the Insular cases. I don't agree with them. I agreed with Judge Harlan's dissent in the Downstreet Bidwell case in 1901. But the point is, we've now gotten to the point where there's a pretty good understanding in the courts and in Congress that each territory needs to have self-determination to move forward, and that Congress has a responsibility to sponsor local self-determination and to recognize local self-determination. So all of a sudden, and that's a result of how the Insular cases have evolved. And, you know, one of the things that's being cited here is, you know, that there's racism in the Insular cases. Okay, well, there is language in the Insular cases in which the justices of the court referred to the cultural and racial differences of the populations of the Philippines and the Puerto Rico, and they referred to that, you know, and said, you know, Congress is going to have to decide whether they want to give citizenship and if they want to give the Constitution and have permanent union with these territories. And the language that they used is language which now the United States is a much more culturally diverse nation. And now that language and those opinions is no longer considered acceptable to me or anybody else. But the point is, the law of those cases, the commentary aside, the law of those cases has evolved. And the Supreme Court has upheld it in 1957, in 1976, in 2016. And so, you know, the problem that we have here is that there's this gentleman, Neil Weir, and this organization, Equally American, who are coming around saying that, you know, we've got to have all these lawsuits and have the courts decide these issues. And every time they lose a court decision, he then claims victory and sends out a fundraising letter. And, you know, the problem is that, you know, when you tell people, we want equality for citizens in the territories, we want them to have the same federal benefits, we want to have the same rights as people in the states. Well, you know, the problem is that under the Constitution of the United States, it's a false promise to suggest that people in the territories can have the same rights as people in the states. There's two reasons for that. One is that the territorial clause does give the, you know, Congress the ability to treat the territories differently than the states. And one of the reasons for that, and, you know, we all agree that it would be nice to give as close to equality as we can, but the bottom line is that the right to vote, the most important right that people have in the states, is the right to vote to be represented in the Congress of the United States and in the Electoral College. And that right is allocated by Article 1 and Article 2 of the Constitution to citizens of the states alone. And the idea that, and, you know, people thought, well, let's give a vote in the House to the District of Columbia, or let's give a vote, you know, and the reason why you can't do that is because the Constitution limits. So the only way you can get equality if you're in the territories under the Constitution as it's currently written is if you become a state or integrate into an existing state.
And then if you do something like that, I think just to cut you off, just to kind of take it locally, I think if that happened, that would jeopardize a lot of the land claims and whatnot here, and you almost become something like Hawaii, right?
Well, this is why Congresswoman Coleman Radowagon has, really stepped up, not just on this matter, just with this proposed resolution, which this resolution is just mimics and is actually taken directly verbatim from a brief that was filed in a Puerto Rico case in the Supreme Court, and Neil Weir was involved, and Equally American was involved, and the ACLU was involved. And this resolution that's been introduced is just directly taken from those briefs. And, the reality is that if the courts were to take this bait and say, well, let's do it again, Congress can't figure it out, so courts are going to have to come in and do this by judicial fiat, what that would do if you started talking about, well, we're going to fix this problem by giving equality to all the, you know, one-size-fits-all status to all the territories, that is going to put at risk structure and the order, the political, social, and cultural order that American Samoa has tried to preserve over the decades. And, you know, American Samoa itself is a profile in courage, because instead of getting on the bandwagon and clamoring, oh, we want U.S. citizenship, we want to be just like the states, the American Samoa has never petitioned for citizenship, because the fact is they have U.S. nationality, as you know, and they have allegiance to the United States, and they demonstrate that allegiance as well or better than any other American community, so they don't have to apologize or defend themselves, because their patriotism is fierce and well recognized. So, but you know, you have invested a lot. American Samoa has invested a lot in preserving its cultural order.
All right.
And
go ahead.
And so, you know, this would put all of the decades of integrity, cultural integrity that has been preserved by American Samoa by taking its position. And, you know, I'll say one last thing. You know, it's interesting because, you know, citizenship in Puerto Rico, Guam, CNMI, and the Virgin Islands is really no different than nationality when you're in the territory. In other words, if you're a U.S. citizen, so-called, in Guam, your rights in Guam are limited the same way your rights are limited as a national in American Samoa. It's only when you come to the United States that, if you're a citizen in Guam, you come right into the United States and you have full citizenship. If you're a national from American Samoa, you come to the United States and you apply for U.S. citizenship, and then you can have full citizenship in the state. But the point is, American Samoa has not gone with the one-size-fits-all on citizenship. It's not gone with one-size-fits-all on a lot of different issues. And it would be really a sad thing if Congress, instead of supporting your self-determination, if Congress decided to impose a one-size-fits-all, you know, in the name of getting rid of the insular cases, ended up, you know, what are you going to replace it with? And nobody knows the answer to that question.
All right. Well, hey, Howard, thank you very much. If you're just joining us, this is Howard Hills, and he is a constitutional scholar and territorial status attorney here. And you've worked on, you know, you've done this for several decades under President Carter, President Reagan. And we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us and sort of give us some clarity on this resolution and why our congresswoman has opted not to co-sponsor this bill. So, sir, thank you very much for joining us on the program today.
Well, thank you for your time.
All right. Have a good day. 93 KHJ. We'll be back after this.